Little Girl Lost in Tennessee is a haunting five-part true crime audiobook told in raw, first-person narration by a journalist who returns to her Appalachian hometown, only to unravel a mystery that never left. When five-year-old Summer Wells vanished without a trace from her family's rural property in June 2021, the case ignited a media storm, online obsession, and one of the largest search operations in Tennessee history. But 4 years later, there's still no trace of her, and no peace for the people left behind. Torn between truth and folklore, guilt and suspicion, our narrator dives headfirst into the shadows of Ben Hill Road, where nothing is what it seems. With every interview, every whispered rumor, and every chilling clue, she uncovers a tangled web of family secrets, small-town politics, and the terrifying possibility that someone never wanted Summer to be found. This isn't just a story about a missing girl. It's about what happens when an entire community turns its back, and what one woman is willing to risk to bring the truth to light. If you believe in justice, survival, and the voices that refuse to be silenced, press play. Welcome to the Murder Tape Chronicles audiobook. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you Little Girl Lost in Tennessee. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, Return to Ben Hill Road. You ever drive into a memory so thick it clings to your windshield like fog? That was me, rolling slow down Ben Hill Road in a rental car that rattled with every pothole. Gravel snapped under my tires like brittle bones, and every turn of the wheel felt like a step backward in time. It was early evening, mid-autumn, and the Tennessee sky was smeared in burnt orange and heavy shadows. The kind of sunset that feels like it's hiding something. I hadn't been back to Hawkins County in more than a decade. Not since I left at 18 with a busted suitcase, two journalism scholarships, and a promise to myself that I'd never come back. But promises break easy when guilt gets involved. And lately, guilt had a way of curling up beside me at night and whispering Summer Wells' name into the dark. 5 years old, blonde hair, bright blue eyes, that infectious sunlit laugh that somehow carried through every video clip I'd ever seen of her. The kind of child whose innocence made the world feel cleaner just for a moment. And yet she was gone, vanished into thin air on a sticky June evening in 2021, leaving behind nothing but a pair of discarded toys, a rusted swing set, and a storm of questions that never stopped raining. Her case wasn't mine, not officially. I wasn't a detective or a cop or part of any task force. I was just a washed-up TV journalist turned true crime podcaster who couldn't stop thinking about one little girl lost in the middle of nowhere. But something about her story had buried itself under my skin. The inconsistencies, the family's strange behavior, the half-truths dressed up as grief. It didn't feel right. None of it did. So I came back. For answers. For closure. Maybe for redemption. As the car crept closer to the address I had burned into my memory, 110 Ben Hill Road, I caught a glimpse of it through the trees. The house. Her house. Peeling paint. Broken windows taped over with plastic sheeting. A sagging porch cradling a couple of sun-bleached lawn chairs that looked like they hadn't held a body in years. There was a mailbox leaning sideways on its post, the letters Wells, nearly scraped clean off by weather and time. I parked the car and just sat there for a minute, engine ticking as it cooled, letting the weight of the place settle on my shoulders like wet wool. The air smelled like damp earth and wood smoke, with just a hint of something metallic. I rolled down the window. That's when I heard it. A swing. Creaking. Back and forth. Slow. Rhythmic. Like a metronome counting down to something terrible. I stepped out of the car and let my boots hit the dirt. The ground was soft, spongy from recent rain. The property was quiet, unnaturally so. No dogs barking. No children laughing. Just the occasional rustle of leaves, and that swing, swaying in the dying light. And then, out of nowhere, a voice behind me. You press. I turned fast, adrenaline spiking. A man stood near the edge of the tree line, hands shoved in the pockets of an oil-stained jacket. He had graying hair slicked back with too much grease, and eyes that didn't blink, just watched. Used to be, I said, keeping my tone calm but firm. Now I just tell stories. The ones that matter. He stepped forward, the gravel crunching under his boots. Don't matter what you tell, he muttered. Ain't no story here. Just folks looking for things that ain't meant to be found. I recognized him. Don Wells. Summer's father. Arrested in 2022 on unrelated charges. Out again. The town had plenty to say about him, none of it kind. Some whispered he knew more than he let on. Others swore he was just a broken man, drowning in guilt and moonshine. I studied his face, hardened, hollow, like someone who hadn't slept since his daughter disappeared. She was 5, I said. A child. Someone knows something. His eyes flashed briefly, then went dull again. Maybe, he said. Maybe not. But this place, it keeps secrets real good. And just like that, he turned and disappeared into the woods, swallowed by shadow like a ghost. I stood there for a long time, alone in the thickening dark. That swing kept moving. Not fast. Not slow. Just steady. Like it didn't care who watched or listened. Like it had seen everything, and still refused to speak. Back at the motel that night, one of those roadside joints with flickering neon signs and scratchy sheets, I sat on the edge of the bed and stared at the photos on my laptop. Summer, smiling in a red dress. Summer in a cowboy hat, hugging a dog. Summer, caught mid-spin on the swing I had just seen in person, her face blurred in motion but unmistakably happy. And then nothing. A hard line drawn between before and after. No one saw her leave. No one heard a scream. Her mother said she walked inside to cool off. When she came back, Summer was gone. Just like that. I didn't believe it. Not fully. Not anymore. The official reports said there was no sign of abduction. No signs of a struggle. No witnesses. Just an open door and a missing child. But this case, it had layers. History. Rumors. Wounds that ran deep in the hills of Tennessee and never quite healed. I'd grown up knowing how this town worked. How silence passed for loyalty. How fear dressed up as faith. I lit a cigarette I hadn't smoked in years, flicked the ash into a chipped coffee mug, and opened a new file on my laptop. Title: Summer Wells, The Disappearance That Won't Let Go. The first entry? My own confession. I don't know what happened to Summer Wells, but I intend to find out. Even if it means dragging every lie in Hawkins County into the light. And so it began. Again. Chapter 2, The Hollow Beneath the Surface. It's a strange thing to walk into a place you once called home and realize it doesn't remember you. Or maybe it remembers too well and just wants you gone. The morning after I visited the Wells property, I drove through downtown Rogersville, sipping coffee that tasted like burnt rubber and trying to make sense of the night's dreams. I'd woken up drenched in sweat more than once. Always the same dream. A little girl's voice calling from somewhere in the woods just out of sight. Always the same feeling, like I was too late. Rogersville hadn't changed much. The same dusty storefronts. The same flickering neon sign above the diner. The same courthouse clock that always ran 5 minutes slow. But there was something different in the air. Like the town had aged not just in years, but in spirit. More tired. More guarded. People looked through you now, not at you. I parked near the diner, Maple and Main, the kind of place where time stands still and gossip moves faster than the speed of light. I hadn't even crossed the threshold before I saw the look. You know the one? That you're not from here anymore look. Behind the counter was a woman I vaguely remembered from high school. Carla something. Sharp cheekbones. Hair sprayed within an inch of her life. She looked up and paused mid-wipe on a mug, her eyes squinting like she was trying to place me. Back visiting family? She asked, too chipper. No, I said. Working on a piece. The Wells case. Her smile dropped like a brick. You're one of them then, she muttered. One of who? Those people digging where they shouldn't, stirring up pain for clicks and listens. That girl's been gone 4 years, honey. Let it be. Let it be. As if any of us really could. I ordered a coffee out of habit and sat in the back booth, where the sun slanted in through dirty blinds and painted prison bars across the table. I pulled out my recorder and pressed play, listening back to the notes I'd recorded in the car the day before. Static. Gravel. Don Wells' voice. Ain't no story here. Just folks looking for things that ain't meant to be found. And underneath his words, something else. A sound I hadn't caught before. A distant metallic clink. Like a chain swinging. Or maybe a gate creaking open. My skin prickled. I rewound it 3 times. Clink. Clink. It wasn't enough to prove anything. But it was something. And in a case like this, something might be all you get. Later that afternoon, I drove up to see the sheriff's department. Sheriff Roland Davis was a tough old bastard with eyes like cracked glass and a handshake that felt like gravel scraping together. He'd been sheriff since I was a teenager, and he didn't look thrilled to see me. I know why you're here, he said before I could even sit down. And I'll tell you what I tell every damn reporter that walks through that door. We did our job. We searched that mountain. We turned over every rock. That little girl vanished, and no one saw a damn thing. But you don't believe she just wandered off, I said quietly. His eyes flicked up to mine. Doesn't matter what I believe. We don't have evidence to say otherwise. You've seen the rumors, though. Online. About her parents. The YouTubers. The psychics. The TikTok sleuths accusing Don and Candace of. Of everything short of satanic sacrifice, he growled. Yeah, I've seen it. And every time we chase one of those leads, it wastes hours we could have used looking for real ones. You want to help? Fine. But don't become part of the circus. I'm not here to point fingers, Sheriff, I said. I just want to understand why no one's been able to get to the truth. He stared at me for a long time, then leaned back and sighed. Because sometimes truth doesn't want to be found, and sometimes folks work real hard to bury it. As I stepped out of the sheriff's office, the wind picked up, blowing dry leaves across the pavement like scattered memories. That phrase stuck in my head. Work real hard to bury it. Back in the car, I headed for the one place I'd been avoiding, the old cemetery on the edge of town. There wasn't any logic to it, just instinct. I remembered a detail from one of the early online sleuth forums. Someone claiming they saw Candace Wells, Summer's mother, visiting a gravesite in the middle of the night. Never confirmed, but it got my curiosity burning. The cemetery was deserted, silent except for the wind rustling through the trees and the soft creak of an old iron gate. I walked between rows of crooked headstones, most of them too weather-worn to read. That's when I saw it. A small plot with faded plastic flowers. A toy truck half buried in the dirt. And a tiny pink butterfly clip lying on the edge of the stone. Not Summer's grave, her body was never found. But someone had been here. Recently. I bent down, brushing away the leaves. The name on the stone wasn't familiar. A little boy. Died in 1998. But the offerings were fresh. Who brings toys to the grave of a stranger's child? I snapped a few photos and recorded a note into my phone. Timestamp, 3:17 p.m. possible symbolic site. Not confirmed. Investigate further. That night, I set up shop at the motel again, white boards, sticky notes, audio logs, everything spread out like I was assembling a jigsaw puzzle with half the pieces missing. The Wells property. The swing. The rumors. The family's shifting stories. The unexplained sound on the audio. The toy truck at the cemetery. I kept looping the question. What if it wasn't about Summer at all? What if this story started long before she disappeared? I dug through court records, CPS reports, old arrest logs. Something began to emerge, not a smoking gun but a pattern. Neglect. Domestic violence. Drugs. Things no one wanted to say out loud. Things a small town would rather pretend didn't happen. Especially if the names involved were familiar. I fell asleep sometime around 2 a.m., head resting against a file folder, my laptop still humming. And in my dreams again, the woods. The voice. Faint. Echoing. I'm still here. Why won't anyone look closer? The next morning, I woke with a single unshakable thought. This isn't a story about one girl who went missing. This is a story about everything this town tried to hide. Chapter 3. Ghosts don't knock, but they follow you home. You ever start pulling on a thread, and instead of coming loose, the whole damn thing starts to choke you? That's what it felt like after I visited the cemetery. That night, after combing through the audio notes and everything I'd dug up so far, I sat in the blue glow of my motel room. Files sprawled across the bed like the wreckage of some private war, and tried to piece it all together. But something kept tugging at me. Not just the girl, or the silence, or the swing still etched in my mind. It was the town. The way it moved. Or didn't. Everywhere I turned, people acted like Summer Wells never existed. Or worse, like they wanted her forgotten. The next morning, I drove back to the Wells neighborhood. Not the house. I didn't want to run into Don again, not just yet. I drove slow. Windows down. Let the air tell me its stories. Houses out here don't have fences. Just the occasional rusted trailer, maybe a junked car in the yard, a few dogs lying motionless in the shade. I passed a little girl riding a bike too small for her, her knees practically knocking the handlebars. She stopped and watched me like she knew what I was there for. I waved. She didn't wave back. Instead, she called out, "You won't find her." I slammed the brakes and looked back. But she was gone. Not inside. Not down the road. Just gone. I blinked. Tried to brush it off as lack of sleep. Hallucinations, maybe. But the knot in my gut wouldn't ease up. Later that afternoon, I met with someone who had reached out anonymously through my podcast email. A woman named Rhonda, who claimed she used to babysit Summer. We met in a small, forgotten park outside town. The kind with one broken bench and a slide that hadn't seen a child in years. Rhonda looked like life had done a number on her. Weathered face, nervous hands, eyes that darted every few seconds like the past might sneak up behind her. She didn't want to be recorded, didn't even want her name used. "I saw things," she said, "back before summer disappeared. Shit that made my skin crawl." "Like what?" She hesitated, looked down, picked at a scab on her knuckle. Don was mean, not just strict, mean, loud, violent, screamed at her for spilling juice once, I remember, threw the cup so hard it shattered. And Candace, she'd just sit there, numb, like her soul checked out years ago. "Did you ever see them hurt Summer?" She looked away. "No, but I saw how scared that girl was. Always flinching, always watching the door. I waited, let the silence stretch. There was this one night," she finally said. "I was babysitting. Candace had gone out. Don wasn't supposed to be home yet, but he showed up drunk, real late. Summer was asleep, and he just sat on the porch smoking, muttering to himself. I heard him say something I'll never forget." "What?" She looked me dead in the eye. Her voice dropped. "You ain't going nowhere, I can't find you." It hit me like ice water. I thanked her and left. She didn't stay long after either, said she was moving out of state. "Tired of ghosts," she said. I didn't blame her. Back at the motel, I pulled up old footage. Interviews with Don, Candace, neighbors, YouTubers who'd turned their obsession into cottage industries. Some of it was pure speculation, conspiracy bullshit, but some of it held weight. One clip stood out. Candace, sitting on the steps, nervously rubbing her arm. "I turned around and she was just gone," she said. "I went in, I looked under beds, in closets, I ran down to the creek. Nothing, just gone." But the way she said it, flat, emotionless, like she was reading a script she didn't believe. I froze the frame and zoomed in. There, on her wrist, a faint bruise. Another video a few days later. Don being interviewed by a local news outlet. He was shaking, but his eyes weren't wet. They were darting, calculating. He said, "We believe someone took her. There's no way she wandered off. Someone's got her." No mention of a suspect. No plea to the kidnapper. Just vague generalities. What struck me most was what came next. He looked straight into the camera and said, "She's alive. I feel it in my bones. But what if she wasn't? What if saying it out loud was the only way to keep from crumbling?" I recorded everything. Every detail. Every inconsistency. And then I went back to the Wells house. I had to. Something was there. Something just out of reach. The property was empty again. Or so I thought. I walked the perimeter. Past the rusted vehicles. Past the collapsed dog pen. Toward the woods. That goddamn swing still swaying. Just slightly. I followed the path into the tree line. Thick brush. Mosquitoes. The air growing colder with each step, like I was walking into the lungs of something ancient. About 50 feet in, I found a clearing. Not large, but distinct. The ground was flat. Leaves pressed down unnaturally. In the center, a circle of stones. Burnt ends of sticks. A few pieces of candy wrappers. And something worse, a scrap of cloth, pink with tiny white dots. Faded. Weather-worn. But unmistakably child-sized. I bagged it. Photographed everything. Not because I thought it would hold up in court, but because I needed proof that something real existed here. That she had been here. Or someone wanted me to believe she had. Back at the car, I sat shaking. Not from fear, but rage. Someone knew. Someone saw. And someone, somewhere in these woods, was still holding on to the truth like it was a loaded gun. That night, I made a choice. No more interviews. No more podcast soundbites. I was going to rip this thing open. Even if it meant torching every lie this town was built on. Even if it meant someone came knocking in the dark. Because this wasn't just about Summer anymore. This was about the rot that grows when no one dares to dig. And I was ready to dig until my hands bled. Chapter 4. The Devil in the Details. I didn't sleep that night. Not even a little. I tried. I turned off the light. I silenced my phone. I even ran the bathroom faucet for white noise. But the images wouldn't stop. The bruised wrist. The pink cloth in the woods. That strange, impossible moment with the little girl on the bike who'd told me, "You won't find her." She was right. At least, not in the way I thought. The next morning, I didn't make coffee. Didn't bother brushing my hair or changing my clothes. I just grabbed my recorder, my notebook, and that evidence bag with the cloth scrap inside it, and drove. Not to the police station. Not to Don and Candace. To the one person I swore I wouldn't get involved with. My brother, Caleb. Caleb had lived in Hawkins County his whole life. He never left. Not like me. He stayed behind after Dad died, took over the family's busted plumbing business, drank too much, married a woman he didn't love, divorced her, then started again. He wasn't a bad guy, but he was tired, hollowed out by small-town decay. And he knew things, unspoken things. Secrets no one else would say out loud, but everyone assumed were true. When I showed up at his place, he didn't look surprised. Just leaned on the porch rail, shirtless, chewing the edge of a toothpick. "Figured you'd come by," he muttered. "How?" He shrugged. "Saw your name on the news blog last night. Said you were poking around the Wells case. Jesus, Em, you really don't know when to quit." "I'm not quitting," I said, stepping onto the porch. "I think someone's lying, and I think this town's helping them do it." He sighed long and low. "That ain't a revelation, sis. That's the way things always been." I handed him the evidence bag. "You ever seen anything like this out there? Behind the Wells property?" He squinted at it. "Maybe. Hard to say. You remember when we were kids and that kid, Joshy McNair, went missing for a few hours out by Beach Creek?" I blinked. "That was a bear attack." "Was it?" He looked at me. "Or was that what they told us? Kid turned up with scratches, scared out his mind, wouldn't talk to nobody. Next thing you know, his family moves away in the middle of the night. Gone. Poof." I felt my stomach twist. "You think it's connected?" "I think people don't just vanish out here, Em. I think somebody helps them disappear." I didn't say it, but I thought it. "Who?" I left Caleb's house shaken, but more determined than ever. This wasn't just about Summer. This was generational. Cyclical. A pattern of silence, of trauma, buried so deep no one dared name it out loud. But I was ready to name it. I started digging through local records, something the podcast listeners had always urged me to do earlier in the season. CPS reports. Court filings. Domestic abuse charges. I found over 60 reports tied to the Wells family over the years. Allegations of neglect. Drugs. Violence. Some dismissed. Some unfounded. A few so horrifying I had to stop reading to breathe. One of them stood out. A report filed in 2009 by an elementary school teacher. She'd documented bruises on one of Don's other children, a different child, long before Summer was even born. The child told her, "Daddy gets mad and makes me sleep in the basement." The case was closed due to lack of evidence. But it wasn't nothing. I called the teacher. She was retired now, living up near Bristol. She picked up on the third ring. "I always knew something bad would happen in that house," she said before I even introduced myself. And I wasn't the only one. That line echoed in my mind like thunder. I asked if I could visit. She agreed. The next day, I drove out to her home. Modest. Warm. Framed photos of grandkids lined the walls. She made me tea, though my stomach was too twisted to drink it. Her name was Eleanor Mathers. Gray hair, shaky hands, but eyes like steel. "Summer was different," she said softly. "Bright. Alive. You could feel it. Like she wasn't built for the world she was born into." "Did you ever meet her?" "Once. Don brought her to a parent-teacher night for one of the older kids. She clung to his leg like her life depended on it. And Candace, she frowned. Never said much. Always looked over her shoulder. Like someone was watching her, even in public." Eleanor pulled out a box. Inside were years' worth of personal notes, photocopied letters she'd written to CPS, journals with entries about her students. And there, between two sheets of paper, was a sketch. A crude crayon drawing. Stick figures. A man. A woman. And a small child behind a door, peeking out. "This wasn't Summer's drawing," Eleanor said. "It was from her older brother. He was 6. Drew this after I asked them to draw their family." The hairs on my arms stood up. "What's behind the door?" She just looked at me. "What do you think it is?" I left her house with that image seared into my mind. The child peeking out from the dark. A witness to things they weren't supposed to see. That night, I pulled up one of the last interviews Candace ever did. It was with a small-time YouTuber who had since vanished from the internet, burned out by death threats and online harassment. But the video still existed. In it, Candace is fidgeting, smoking a cigarette, barely making eye contact. The interviewer asks her what she thinks happened to Summer. Candace exhales, looks off camera, and whispers, I think someone took her. But not the way people think. What do you mean? She blinks. Her eyes go wet. Sometimes people disappear, long before they're gone. I paused the video. Rewound. Played it again. Sometimes people disappear, long before they're gone. Was that a confession? A metaphor? A cry for help? Whatever it was, it told me one thing. She knew. I grabbed my recorder. Entry log. October 14th, 9:42 p.m. Candace Wells knows more than she's said. The silence isn't ignorance. It's protection. She's protecting someone. Or something. But that silence has weight. And I can feel it pressing in. That night, I dreamt I was in the woods again. Same swing. Same trees. But this time, there was something else. A door. Half open. Light behind it. And a voice, small, frightened, saying, "Don't forget me." Chapter 5, The Place Where the Silence Ends. I didn't come here to save anyone. I didn't come here to be a hero, or to make peace with my past, or to write a best-selling podcast script. I came here to understand, to give voice to the truth that had been buried beneath layers of dust, silence, fear, and generational rot. To find a 5-year-old girl the world had forgotten, at least officially. But as I stared at the whiteboard in my motel room, every theory mapped out, every connection strung together with red yarn like some cliché detective's lair, I knew I wasn't just looking for Summer anymore. I was looking for all of them. All the girls and boys who slipped through the cracks. All the stories that went silent when the spotlight turned off. All the ghosts that didn't want to be ghosts. Summer Wells was just the loudest among them. The breaking point came in the early hours of a rain-slicked October morning. My inbox pinged. Subject: "You're close." No sender. No traceable IP. No name. Just a GPS pin. Coordinates less than 3 miles from the Wells property, deep in the woods behind a ravine the search dogs never reached. I hesitated. Every logical bone in my body screamed trap. But every instinct I'd sharpened over the past 10 years told me this was it. This was the moment the silence would crack. I packed a flashlight, my recorder, my pepper spray, and 2 backup phone batteries. I left a note on the motel nightstand. "If I don't come back, tell the truth. All of it." The trail was almost invisible, overgrown, covered in dead leaves, slick with mud. I followed it for nearly an hour. My lungs burned. My shoes were soaked. Every branch that snapped beneath me felt like a warning. Every owl's hoot felt like a threat. But I didn't stop. Not until I reached the clearing. There, just beyond the brush, stood what looked like an old hunting shack. Collapsed roof. Rotten wood. Nature was trying to reclaim it, vines crawling up the side like fingers dragging it into the earth. But what stopped me cold wasn't the structure. It was what lay in front of it. A well. An actual stone well, weathered, moss-covered, forgotten. I stepped closer, the breath catching in my throat. Etched crudely into the concrete lip were the initials, SW. My knees buckled. I dropped to the ground and stared. It didn't make sense. Who would carve her initials here? Who would know to bring me here? I reached for my recorder. Entry log. October 15th. I've reached the location. GPS matches the anonymous tip. There's a collapsed shack. Oh well. And her initials. I don't know what this means, but I'm going in. I pointed the flashlight down into the well. It was empty. Mostly. Except for a doll. A fucking doll. Tattered. Mud-caked. Missing an eye. And sitting beside it, barely visible beneath the grime, a small pink sandal. The same kind Summer had been wearing the day she vanished. I froze. My mind fractured. There it was. Proof. Not hearsay. Not rumor. Not speculation. Proof. Someone brought her here. Someone knew this place. Someone had come back to leave the message. I was still recording when I heard the voice. "You weren't supposed to find this." I turned fast, flashlight beam cutting through the trees. Don Wells stood there, shotgun slung over one shoulder, eyes glassy from drink or drugs or both. His voice was calm. Too calm. "You people think you're helping," he slurred. "You're not. You're just stirring up pain." I held up my hands. "Don, I don't want to fight. I want answers. That's all." "You don't want the truth," he spat. "Nobody wants the truth. They want closure. They want a clean little box to put the ugly in." "What happened to her?" I asked. "Just tell me." He stared at the ground. The rain started again, soft at first, then harder, until it soaked us both. He lowered the shotgun. "She was gone before anyone knew it," he said. "Long before that day. Candace, she wasn't well. And I wasn't enough. The house was broken. The kids were scared. But Summer, she was light. She was everything. And we were the dark." I didn't speak. I let him keep going. "One night she wandered off. Middle of the night. Maybe sleepwalking. Maybe trying to run away. Candace didn't even notice. She was passed out. I found her here." He pointed to the well. "She'd fallen. I don't know how. But she wasn't breathing." The rain masked the tears in his voice, but I heard them. "And I panicked," he said. "I buried it. I buried her. The way we bury all the pain in this place. My throat burned. You never called for help. He laughed, a horrible broken sound. There is no help out here. Silence. Then he raised the shotgun again. I'm sorry, he said. And then a voice behind him. You should be. Candace. Pale. Silent. Standing behind him like a ghost. He turned. His jaw trembled. For a moment, I thought he might pull the trigger. But he didn't. He dropped the gun. And collapsed. On the ground. Sobbing. Candace didn't comfort him. She just looked at me. She told me once, she said. She wanted to go somewhere the light could reach. I couldn't speak. Not then. Not for hours. Later, the police came. They took Don. They took statements. They took the evidence. The GPS ping, it turned out, had come from Candace. A confession. A plea. A final act of love. Or guilt. Or both. The well was searched. Forensics confirmed the truth. Summer had died there. Accidentally. Tragically. Alone. The town went quiet again. But not the same quiet. A quiet like breath held after a long scream. The podcast episode went live a month later. Title: The Place Where the Silence Ends. It wasn't a murder mystery. It wasn't a kidnapping. It was a story about neglect. About trauma. About what happens when the systems meant to protect fail. About a girl who deserved more. Who was more. And it ended with my voice, cracking as I said. Summer Wells is gone. But she was never lost. She was just waiting for someone to listen. And now she's heard.